Ready for the show? I'm ready to start.
10, 9, ignition sequence starts. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Liftoff on Apollo 11. Tower clear.
Welcome to ET First Contact Radio. This is your host speaking, Maarten Horst, and I have a very special and interesting guest tonight. Her name is Amy Vickers, and she will speak about the crystal skull that was found, I believe, in Peru. And I want to welcome you to the show, Vicky, and welcome you to the listeners. Hello, Amy.
Yes, hello, Maarten. I'm so glad to be here.
Good. So you are a co-worker with Lord Pai. We actually requested this interview, but I'm very happy to do it with you, and maybe you can share all that you want about the crystal skull from the Star Child.
Thank you very much, Maarten. I have to correct you there. The Star Child skull is actually a bone skull. It's not a crystal skull. There are crystal skulls around the world, and some of them are incredibly intriguing. But the Star Child is actually a real bone skull. It's humanoid. It looks vaguely human, but it has some very substantial differences from a normal human skull. And we've been scientifically investigating this skull since 1999, and in that time virtually every test that we've run on it has uncovered results unlike what you would expect to find in a human skull. And most recently, we've uncovered DNA inside the skull that is unlike anything not only in a human, but unlike anything previously seen on Earth. So we really feel like we could potentially have, at the very least, a new species and possibly even some very compelling evidence of extraterrestrial intervention on Earth or presence on Earth.
Yes, and can you go more into depth about this theory that it could be extraterrestrial, this skull? What are the indications that it's not from the Earth?
Absolutely. Well, the very first person to suggest that it may be not from Earth, that it may be an alien, was actually one of the skull owners. It's owned by Ray and Melanie Young, a couple in Texas in America, who, in addition to being fantastic people and in addition to Melanie being a neonatal nurse with a lot of experience with skulls, so she really knew what she was looking at, they were both members of MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, and they were very aware of aliens and alien presence on Earth. Melanie took one look at this skull with her years of experience with human skulls and said, "This is not a human skull. In fact, this looks like this is the kind of skull that would fit in the head of the gray alien." Now, you know the gray type aliens, they're the ones with the bulbous head, the big almond-shaped black eyes. They're the one that are most often seen in the literature and things like that. So
yes,
I'm
aware of it.
Yes, yes, it's very common. So just on face value, literally, Melanie was really convinced that it was an alien. When she took it to Lloyd Pye and asked him to put together a research team to investigate the skull, his first reaction was that it must be human and that it must be some kind of deformity. But over these 13 years of testing, we found fibers and residue inside the bone that are unlike anything seen in any bone anywhere on Earth. They're completely unprecedented. They're completely new to science. They absolutely look alien. The bone itself is much thinner and much lighter than normal human bone, but at the same time, dramatically stronger. Human bone, when it gets thinner, it gets weaker. This bone's thinner and stronger. I mean, that's absolutely alien. The shape of the skull in every aspect is radically different from what a human has. Its brain is about 400 cubic centimeters bigger than it ought to be, about 200 cubic centimeters bigger than the average human brain. So that's a substantial difference. Absolutely every point of reference that you can look at on this skull is radically different from a human skull. And while it's very difficult to say this is a definitively alien thing because there is no accepted alien to hold it up and compare it to apples, the mountain of evidence that we have showing that it's really not human and yet at the same time it is human-like, it does have human-like traits, and it does have some very human-like DNA mixed in with the very not human DNA that's also been recovered. So it is very, very difficult to say this absolutely for 100% certain is an alien skull, but we really believe that it's the most compelling potential alien relic in the world today or really at any point in history.
Yes, I agree. I have seen the DVD, the presentation that Lord Pye made, because when I was in England in 2009, I was at the Silent Circle Cafe, which is a shop where people sell all kinds of materials, DVDs about crop circles and UFOs. And one of the DVDs that caught my attention was the DVD. It was a presentation by Lord Pye, and I purchased it, and I've seen it twice. Maybe you can share information with the listeners where they can find this DVD online.
That would be a little bit tricky. Unfortunately, Lloyd's DVDs are not something that's controlled by us, and so it's up to third parties to whether they distribute them or not. However, we do have a number of free videos available on the internet and on YouTube, and most of Lloyd's presentations are on YouTube. Because they are owned by third parties, we don't put them up ourselves, and technically people aren't supposed to, but there are some very naughty people out there who do put the presentations up, and so you can get and watch for free virtually every presentation by Lloyd Pye. but Official Lloyd Pye, that's LLOYDPYE, Official Lloyd Pye, is Lloyd's YouTube channel, and there are a number of brilliant focused videos there, including three brand new ones that have just been put up in the last month and a half, that discuss the Star Child in really good, clear, concise terms. So it's definitely worth checking it out. YouTube is your best bet by far for videos.
Okay, wonderful. So can you maybe share the latest insights that Lloyd Pye and yourself discovered about the skull?
Yes, absolutely. We have some very exciting things going on at the moment. Back in 2010, we connected with a new genetics team in the United States, in America. And this this team is using absolute cutting-edge DNA technology. The thing that's hampered us to this point is that the Starchild skull is 900 years old. It died 900 years ago. And it was buried in a mine tunnel where it was protected from water, it was protected from sun, it was protected from a lot of the things that cause DNA to be destroyed. So we do have a good amount of DNA there, but unfortunately, as in any sample that old, the DNA is contaminated. So when you try and use standard DNA recovery techniques like you'd use at a crime scene, they aren't capable of weeding out that contamination. In fact, we had a result in 1999 that really hamstrung us for a while that we now know was a contamination, where it got a result saying it's a completely normal human male. But we know now that that was absolutely a contamination, unfortunately, by one of the student geneticists who was working on the sample. So we've really had this struggle, almost waiting for the technology to get to a point where we were able to use it. And that happened in 2006, and then we had to wait for the price to come down to a level that we could afford, which happened at about 2010. So using this absolute cutting-edge technology that can weed out the contamination and give you a really good, clear, valid result, we've been able to recover from the Star Child several samples of DNA. Now, it's a little bit technical, it's a little bit complicated, but bear with me, I promise you it's worth it. We have three amazing results out of this DNA that we've recovered from the Star Child. The first is in its mitochondrial DNA. Now, that's the DNA that only comes from your mother. It's very, very highly conserved. Everyone's mitochondrial DNA is very, very similar to everybody else's mitochondrial DNA. And within this DNA, in the Star Child skull, we have found a staggering number of differences. All humans within their mitochondrial DNA have only got about 120 differences. It doesn't matter whether you're black, white, tall, short. None of that matters. Male, female, all of us have only got about 120 differences in that mitochondrial DNA. The Star Child skull has in the range of 800 to 1,000. So that's radically more than any human has. Neanderthals have only got about 200 among all Neanderthals. Radically more than that. I mean, this is just an absolute staggering result. If you or I or any other human was born with that many differences in our mitochondrial DNA, you couldn't survive it. You would never get to be born. Your body cannot function with that many differences in its mitochondrial DNA. So that is incredible thing number one. Incredible thing number two is in the Star Child's nuclear DNA. Now, this is the DNA that comes from both parents, and it does vary a lot between people. That's what makes you individual. It gives you your eye color and your hair color and all of that good stuff. So there is a lot of variation within nuclear DNA, but at the same time, that variation happens within a known spectrum. There are certain variations you can have, and there are certain variations that just kill you or make you really sick or give you all kinds of problems. So they actually know quite a lot about this. Now, in the Star Child's nuclear DNA, we sent these samples off to the big National Institutes of Health database in Maryland in the States. And there's a fantastic program that they have there where they basically compare whatever your sample is to everything they have in their database. And this is an enormously comprehensive database that they have. So comparing the Star Child skull's nuclear DNA that we've recovered to absolutely everything in the database. This is humans, prehumans, primates, every kind of mammal, every kind of vertebrate, every kind of invertebrate, bacteria, you name it, they have the DNA from it. They compare the Starchild skull DNA to this, and some of it comes back as a very, very close match to human DNA. Others of the samples that we sent come back with no similar match anywhere in the database. Not an exact match, not even a similar match. This DNA is absolutely unlike anything that has been found, that has been recorded in any creature anywhere on Earth. That's amazing. That's unheard of. Everything has a similarity to something. And yet we have this incredible result with no similarity whatsoever.
That's staggering news.
It really is. It was one of the results that we got fairly early, and we were just absolutely amazed by it. Now, the incredible thing number three is a little bit more technical again, but I know your listeners are sharp, and I know that they'll be able to wrap their heads around this. There is an incredibly important gene that we all have that you've probably heard of called the FOXP2 gene. FOXP2 gene. It's, among other things, gives us our ability to speak, but it also is crucial to the development of your brain, your lungs, your nervous system, your motor skills. Basically, everything in your body needs this gene at some level to function. And all of us have an absolutely identical FOXP2 gene. Every single person on the planet has an identical FOXP2 gene. Now, that's not to say that some people don't have mutations and you end up with people who can't speak or who have other problems, but every healthy person out there has an identical FOXP2 gene, and those people that have a mutation have one or two tiny little flecks of the DNA slightly different. If you have anything majorly out of whack, if you've got more than one or two differences in that DNA, you can't survive it. It's a very, very, very crucial gene, and it's absolutely essential that that gene be complete and be exactly like the gene of every other person on the planet, because that's what we need to survive. So remember, all humans, zero differences, or one or two maybe you can survive, but basically zero differences. The Starchild skull has 56 differences. And that's just in the fragment that we've recovered of the gene. It's not even the whole gene. So in just a partial recovery of this gene that should have zero differences, we have 56 differences in the Starchild skull. Absolutely impossible for a human to survive that. There is no ifs, there is no buts, there are no maybes. A human cannot survive having five differences in their FOXP2 gene, and the Starchild skull has 56. So this is such incredible news that we're now applying to grants, applying for grants through different foundations. This really is, our geneticist said, this isn't even a golden needle, it's a diamond needle in the haystack. So we're very, very excited about it. We think that this is the most solid evidence that the skull is an alien that we've ever recovered. And we have some really amazing evidence up to this point. So to say that is no small thing. This is enormously significant. It should have zero. It has 56 differences in just the small fragment we've recovered from the FOXP2 gene.
Well, and if you add those three anomalies up, and it's undeniable. So what's the future idea about publishing this scientific evidence? What's your idea to make it public?
Well, we definitely do plan on publishing the evidence. Our geneticist wants to complete the entire genome recovery, which unfortunately is a little out of our financial grasp at the moment, which is why we're seeking private funding and also applying for grants and doing a few other things just to try and enable us to get the full genome result. But we absolutely have all of the results to date published on the Starchild website, which is starchildproject.com, and there are links to it from the homepage. You can find it very easily. Also, those videos on YouTube go over this in a little more detail with some graphics that make it really clear and easy to understand. But as we get more results and continue to recover more DNA, I believe our geneticist is already working on a scientific paper, which will go through the peer review process, and, you know, that can take a year or more. So we are definitely working on getting these results published, but your listeners can see everything that we have up to the minute, literally up to the minute, on the starchildproject.com website and also on official Lloyd Pye, that's official LLOYDPYE on YouTube.
Well, that sounds very interesting, and I want to suggest all the listeners to take a look in it, because this is really, really undeniable evidence that there is something going on and that there have walked species on this planet that we cannot characterize in any human form, according to the evidence, as you are saying. So, summing this up, I want to say that this is really amazing. And is there any news that something else is found in the Andes or other desolated places? Because there might be more out there to find and to recover.
We absolutely feel that the Star Child is just one piece of a very, very large puzzle. We think it's the best piece and the most important piece for disclosing alien reality that is available at the moment, but there are certainly a number of other areas that could be just as significant. The Starchild skull was actually found in the Copper Canyon region of Mexico. So that's in Mexico, which has numerous stories of women being visited by beings from the stars and impregnated and given children to look after when previously they'd been barren or unable to have children. So there's definitely a context for the Star Child being there. Unfortunately, the way that it was found was by a young girl who was there on holidays from the States. Her family was Mexican, and they went back to visit the village where her parents were from. She went off exploring where she wasn't supposed to, and she discovered both the Star Child and a normal human skeleton, both lying, the Star Child in a shallow grave and the human just on top of the soil, in this mine tunnel. She said that she collected the bones from both skeletons and tried to bring them all back to America with her, but unfortunately they were caught in a flash flood and she was only able to recover the two skulls. So if we were able to go and pinpoint the village that she visited, which unfortunately we can't, she didn't give anyone that information before she died. If we could pinpoint the village, according to the provenance, the story that she gave us, those other bones have already been washed away. So we could certainly go through and try and explore other mine tunnels, but there are tens of thousands of these just in the Copper Canyon region. So it would be a very extensive process to try and find any other Star Child-like skulls. However, right now, sitting in museums in Peru are literally hundreds of incredibly unusual skulls, every bit as unusual as the Star Child, interspersed with some human skulls that are a little odd, but basically still human. All of these skulls collectively are called the conehead skulls because the skull is elongated. It looks kind of like the coneheads, you know, the Dan Aykroyd movie. It looks a little bit like that, but not really. But they're called the coneheads. And because some of these are just normal human skulls that really have been deformed, the mothers have shaped the baby's head into a slightly longer shape, these skulls are dismissed as all being human, when in reality, among all of those normal human skulls that have just been reshaped a little bit, there are hundreds of absolute, genuine, radically different, no way you can say that they're human, probably alien skulls. These are skulls that have brains more than twice the size of ours, bones substantially thicker than ours, massive lower jaw bones, very, very large, almost square eye sockets. There's really no way to say that these are human. And when they hold them up against the actual human skulls, it's very clear. Anyone can see the difference. And we're very fortunate to be working with Brian Forrester in Peru, who has provided samples to Lloyd Pye, who's working with basically the same genetics team to try and get some results from those skulls. They've recently done a carbon-14 test to see how old they are, and everything so far has been exactly as expected. So we're really excited to see what the DNA results are going to be out of the samples that have been set. But unfortunately, that's another issue where we're working on the funding side of things.
Yes, I know that in South America, especially in the Andes region from Peru, that there are some anomalies yes, anomalies in the Andes, in the ice, and there have been some discoveries from really weird things. And I know that in Terra del Fuego, Fireland, you know, in the south of Argentina, there was a human skeleton found that was older than the first human that, according to the evolution theory, was found in the Rift Valley in Africa in Kenya. So this completely turns the whole evolution theory upside down. But science doesn't do anything with it because it doesn't fit in the model of thinking. But there was, I think it was in 1996, and there was a human skeleton found that was older.
Yes, you're absolutely right. There's an enormous body of evidence of things that don't fit in with the mainstream's linear view of this happened and this happened and this happened and this happened. And it's that great Schopenhauer quote, all truths pass through three stages. First they're ignored, then they're ridiculed, then they're held to be self-evident. Right now half of it's being ignored and half of it's being ridiculed, but the time will come when all of these things are cumulatively viewed as part of our history, and the history is just going to have to be rewritten to account for them. There is so much evidence now that no one can say this is an anomaly and this is an accident and this is a contamination. There is just too much now to deny it.
Yes. Because according to the evolution theory, according to the model, the human species was the last to enter the southern part of South America. Well, the evidence turns the whole theory upside down and tells the opposite.
Absolutely. And there are so many examples of that. There's a wonderful book, which I know is one of Lloyd Pye's favorites, called The First American, that talks about a very similar situation where there is evidence of a human creating art on a recently deceased bone of a woolly mammoth, which it is all wrong for the timeline that they have. And this was a well-respected lady with all the credentials, and she tried to present this evidence in scientific papers and was just shot down so hard, was thrown out of the profession. But instead of backing off, she really stuck by her research. And it's just amazing how clear and how obvious it is that everything that she had was real and valid, and how fervently her colleagues, her friends, denied it and just turned the cold shoulder to her and would have nothing to do with it. There are so many examples of this in every country in the world, in every context, of someone finding something that just doesn't make sense. And despite all logic, despite all suggestion to the contrary, the mainstream somehow just decides we're not going to have a bar of that, we're going to keep doing it our way. La 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 la, I can't hear you, I can't see you, this can't be real. It's amazing. Science is supposed to be this fearless exploration of the unknown, and instead they just end up cowering half the time and ignoring the evidence.
Yes, indeed. What I would like to know is Lord Pye and you, you're working together in a team. How exactly is your relationship to him, and how did...
Sorry, Martin, you cut out a little bit there. Are you still with me?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, brilliant. Lloyd and I absolutely do work together. He's been involved with the Star Child since 1999. I didn't come on board until 2004. I actually got involved with it when it was during a research phase that was being done in the United Kingdom, which is where I'm based at the moment. Lloyd will actually be in the UK and in Europe next month doing a very extensive lecture tour. So I strongly advise anyone in the UK and Europe to go to lloydpye.com, LLOYDPYE.com. I'm not sure if they're up, but he'll very shortly be putting up, if they're not there, his lecture dates and locations. It is so worth seeing him. He's absolutely brilliant when he presents. And there is so much new information out right now. So we're definitely working it from a number of different angles, trying to secure the funding, trying to proceed with the research that we're trying to get done.
Yes, it sounds very interesting. And where is Lord Pi located himself then?
He's currently based out of Florida. The project has really been international. We've had research done in America, in Canada, in the UK. So it's been really a global effort. I think we had some done in Australia. I know we're doing some testing in Australia right now. The top labs in the world are spread all over the place, so you kind of have to go where they are. And so this has become a really international effort with people scattered all over the world trying to get things done.
Yeah, and I think it in the beginning, in the when you first started to investigate the skull, it was a whole project to find out where you could find those locations where they can do this DNA research, this genetic research.
Yeah, back in 1999, there were only a few labs in the world that were capable of testing a 900-year-old DNA sample. And unfortunately, because everybody had been waiting so long for that technology, those labs were backed up for years. It was ridiculously expensive, in the hundreds of thousands, if not millions. And it was just so far out of reach that when we received a very generous offer from the Bold Institute in Vancouver, Canada, to do a preliminary DNA test, to just try and do DNA testing on equipment that really wasn't designed for ancient DNA. It was only designed for DNA younger than 50 years. And remember, the Starchild skull is 900 years. So this lab was doing DNA research on samples younger than 50 years, and it was actually a teaching lab. So it was students doing all of the work. What does BOLD stand for? The Bureau of Legal Dentistry, I think. They specialized in doing teeth. And so they took one of the teeth from the Star Child skull. We have only two erupted teeth left in the maxilla, unfortunately, in the upper jaw. So it was a real blow to sacrifice one of them. But they did their best with it. I believe that they acted with integrity and with the best of intentions. But after a number of attempts, they had failed to recover really enough DNA to give any kind of valid result. And the tiny fragment that they were able to recover, it never quite seemed right. It seemed strange, especially to Lloyd Pi at the time, that they would have no result contamination, no result, no result, no result, and then twice in a row get the same very obscure, very small result. So we were a little concerned that there may be an issue there, and so we tried again in 2003, this time using a lab that could do ancient DNA testing. So this is from 1999 to 2003. The technology had gotten a little bit better, it had gotten a little bit cheaper, and most importantly, it had become much more accessible. So we were very lucky to work with Jason Eshelman and Rippon Marley, two extremely well-recognized geneticists. They actually worked on the Kennewick Man, if anyone's heard of that. And they were unable to get anything remotely like the results the Bold Lab was able to get. And this was using vastly superior equipment. And a vastly superior lab environment that was actually designed for a 900-year-old sample. So that pretty much verified to everybody that unfortunately the 1999 result was flawed and contaminated and really couldn't be relied on. And since 2003 and 2004, we've really been waiting for new technology to come along, which we knew was in the pipeline at the time we were doing that testing. And now that technology is available and relatively affordable, it's still certainly not inexpensive. You know, if it was you or me wanting to test our DNA, well, that's live, fresh, uncontaminated DNA. You can do that for a couple thousand dollars. But to test comprehensively to get the full genome from something 900 years old is very specialized work. And so we're absolutely thrilled to have a lab that does specialize in that, that's willing to do the work. And now it's just a matter of continuing to get the little trickles of funding that we're getting so that we can continue to do that research. And if these results are half as impressive to the rest of the world as they are to me, I think it's going to be a fairly short journey from here on.
Yes. So what type of research are you still wanting to do on the skull? And how can people help you with a donation?
Well, there is certainly a donate button on the starchildproject.com website. We always do appreciate donations. But because of the nature of the DNA testing and the amount of money that's involved, we're talking in the six-figure range, we are looking for actual investors as opposed to donations. We have additional information on that if anybody would like to email us. It's all on the Star Child Project website. But as I said, we're also pursuing grants. Now that we have this new FOXP2 result, it makes us, we think, very attractive to granting agencies. So we're hoping to pursue that avenue. And really, it's just time. We've put so much effort into this, and we have such incredibly strong results now. I think that there are probably wheels turning that we're not even aware of yet, and it's just a matter of time before things come to fruition for us.
Yes. Well, congratulations with it. And then I want to ask you another question, and it just came up in my mind. Has there ever been done research on the skull for rare earth elements like vanadium or thorium or you name it, rare earth elements like vanadium, thorium, uranium, or are there other elements that are not found in the human skull?
We've done both mass spectrometry, which measures the elements in the bone, and we've also done inorganic chemistry, which tells you what compounds are in the bone at the time of death, which is useful for knowing things like what it was eating and where it was living. Now, when we did the mass spectrometry telling us what elements are in it, we found very, very interestingly that the bone's chemical structure, its biochemical structure, it doesn't have any rare metals in it. It doesn't have anything that just makes you think, oh, wow, this a human couldn't have that. But what it does have is a profile very, very similar to tooth enamel. The hardest part of your body is your tooth enamel. And the Starchild mm-hmm. skull bone is very similar to that. It has an incredibly high amount of collagen in it. Now, the thing to know about your tooth enamel is while it is incredibly strong in that you can chew on it and you can bite it, that strength comes with a certain level of brittleness. You can't bend it. It's strong to put pressure on it, but it's not strong to try and bend it. That's how people end up with cracked teeth and broken teeth. The Starchild skull bone, if it was just made of tooth enamel, would be fragile in a way. It would be more prone to broken bones. It would require a little more force maybe, but because of that kind of counterintuitive brittleness, it's really not a good substance for the rest of the bones of your body to be made out of. That's why they're not made out of it. It doesn't allow the blood to flow through as easily, and it's just really not a good material for the rest of your body. But somehow the Starchild skull's bone managed to account for this. Not only is it incredibly strong, it's also got flexibility. It has that higher level of collagen that gives it flexibility. And if you look at the bone under a very, very high power microscope, you can see very clearly, and there are pictures of this again on the website and in the videos, very clearly that there are fibers inside the bone. These are fibers woven through the bone. It's like steel rebar reinforcing concrete. Nothing like this is found in any bone anywhere in the world. The only time you ever hear or see this is in the movies when they're talking about aliens. In fact, the very popular movie Avatar specifically mentions, I think, carbon fibers reinforcing the bone of the blue aliens, and that makes them so much stronger. the Star Child literally has that. They're not necessarily carbon fibers, but they're there. They're clear. Anybody can see it. And for anybody who's wondering, we have had fungal and bacterial experts analyze these fibers. They say they're absolutely not fungus, they're not bacteria. It does not appear to be any kind of foreign contamination. These are actually part of the bone. They grew in the bone because they were supposed to be there. I mean, that alone, you would think, would be enough to make people sit up and take notice. We really hope that one day this skull is going to provide treatments for osteoporosis, just about any condition that you can have with problems with your bones. Wouldn't it be wonderful if you break your arm and you go to the doctor and you get a shot and now it heals in 1 week instead of six? I mean, the potential for this is absolutely phenomenal. And so we're really excited about doing further research on it. But it's not just that. It's every element of the bone. Inside the cancellous holes, the holes inside your bone where your bone marrow and your blood lives when you're alive, After 900 years, the bacteria in your body and in the environment completely clean out those holes. It's absolutely perfect. There's not a speck left in them. And the human skull that was found with the Star Child shows that very clearly. Absolutely not a speck left in it. The Star Child skull in those holes where the marrow should be has a dried up reddish residue. Now, your first thought would be, oh, well, that must be dried out bone marrow. Well, dried out bone marrow is black, not red. This is very clearly red. And there shouldn't be dried out bone marrow there. Bacteria eat that stuff. It's gone. There should be nothing left. Whatever that reddish stuff is completely immune to the bacteria that we have here on Earth. They can't consume it. How is that possible? I mean, how can you say that any human anywhere somehow just magically happens to come along with a substance in its bones that doesn't kill it, doesn't hurt it, helps it, and is completely resistant to bacteria? I mean, what if this is the answer to infections? What if this is the cure for every kind of infection? You would think someone would want to investigate that. You'd think someone would be tripping over themselves to find out more about that, and hopefully that person is out there somewhere and becomes aware of what we're trying to do.
Well, that's very interesting feedback that you're giving, because if you add up all those anomalies, you can be quite sure that this is not Earth-born. This is not from our planet, because there are so many things that are different than the mammal or human way that the chemicals react in the bones and in the body and in the DNA. There are too many differences. There are too many anomalies.
Absolutely.
It's not just that one thing is different, but on many levels there are different differences.
You're absolutely right, and that goes back perfectly to the point you were making about all of the things in the world that are so different from what they ought to be, and you would think anybody could see it, and it's just so great that there are some people like your listeners who are open to it, who can accept that there may be something out there this amazing that maybe isn't on the 6 o'clock news yet, but is going to get there one day, and we think one day very soon.
I agree with you, Amy. And Amy, there's a question I want to ask you related to the crystal skull, related to the existence of ETs, because worldwide there are events, visitations, crop circles, flying saucers, light bulbs, secrets that are kept by our governments. How do you see disclosure happening, and how do you see the Star Child having a contribution in the worldwide disclosure movement? How do you see it related? What's your idea about it?
We really see the Star Child as a key element, and I know that sounds immodest, but it has the great advantage of being 900 years old, and of taking years and years and years to really prove to everybody that it is an alien. So it gives people a chance to get accustomed to the idea. And even when we do prove that it's an alien, which we think is going to happen in about the next 2 or 3 years, when we do prove that, people who would be frightened by that or concerned by that can tell themselves, well, it's 900 years old. They might have been here 900 years ago, but they're not here now. I don't have to worry about it now. And the people who are ready, who are open-minded, can see this is here. This is real. This, it may have been here 900 years ago, but if it was here, then there are others here. So it yes. gives people a little more wriggle room. And the fact that it is just a nice, harmless little skull, it's nothing too scary, it's not a UFO landing somewhere and aliens coming out and what are they going to do and are we in danger? It's just a nice little skull that sits quietly and doesn't make too much of a mess. It's non-intimidating. And we're
Yes, and when I think about aliens, I don't necessarily think they are hostile. They could be benign, you know? And it's clear that in the past, there were alien visitations, and the crystal skull is, or the, not the crystal skull, the star child is one of the examples, but there are more examples from the past, like cavings in caves and this kind of things. So, do you think aliens are still here? I mean, maybe we shouldn't call them aliens, but star brothers and star sisters, but do you think they are still here?
Oh, I think absolutely they are. I think that people need to understand that there's more than one kind. There's, as you say, I'm sure there are primarily benign species out there. There's probably one or two malevolent ones, and there's probably one or two benevolent ones. But it's like people. Not all people are good or bad or neither. Everybody's a little bit different. And I think that the simplest explanation is that other species and other entities are likely to be the same way. So I'm not concerned by it. I think that if we were in any real danger or if anything really bad is happening, it's probably already happening now and we're completely unaware of it. And I don't think that disclosure is suddenly going to make us aware of it. I don't think we're going to know anything that they don't want us to know. But I think the governments are preparing the way. Religion and government, really all of the powers that be in the world, can see that they just can't keep a lid on this anymore, and so they're gradually starting to chip away at the stigma and the fears. Things like the French government releasing their UFO records, like the Vatican coming out and saying they'd be cool with aliens. There are just so many little things happening that it's not really enough to raise alarm for anybody or make the general public too concerned, but it's just a slow, gradual easing into the fact that aliens are there and that they're real. And I really think that might be what 2012 is about.
Yeah, me too. And I welcome the contact we could make with the aliens. And I think if enough people are open-minded for the idea that we could be a galactic society, then it will happen.
I think so. Lloyd Pye likes to liken the Star Child to the moon landing because that brought us into space. That made us realize we could get into space. Proving that aliens are real makes us realize that we're not alone anymore. And I really think that could be a very positive thing. There's always going to be the nutcases and the greedy people who try and exploit it or go mad with it or, you know, fail to act in the way that we hope that they would. But I think in general it can only be positive. Humans fundamentally are programmed to try and keep up with the Joneses. People act better when they think somebody else is looking. And maybe if everybody in the world felt like there's neighbors out in the galaxy now watching us and saying, oh my goodness, look at what they're doing. Look at it. Can you believe they're still shooting each other and they're still blowing each other up? I think that for a lot of people, that would start making a difference. I think that people would become a little more conscious of the harm that's being done to the planet and to our fellow human beings. I think while there's always going to be bad people who do bad things, most of us are going to be very positively influenced by that.
Yeah, I think when we wake up with the notion that we are not alone, and when the visitors from other planets come here, that there will come an era of peace, that we will see that we are all the same, that not that we are the same, but that we are equal, you know?
I agree with you, absolutely.
So maybe that's where 2012 is about.
I hope so, because it would be really disappointing to have put so much work into the Star Child and be so close and then have the world end for no apparent reason. But
no, I don't think the world will end. And what I think is that when things will come into the open in the mainstream media, the Star Child skull will be phenomenal news.
We certainly think so. We're very much looking forward to the day that we get to hold a press conference with some really verified, ironclad, multiple labs have done the testing and all gotten the same results kind of proof, and stand up and say, this is your alien. He's not running around with a laser or a spaceship, but there it is, and it's real, and it's time that you all stop kidding yourselves. We think that's going to be a very special day.
Yes. Amy, I have a question for you. We have about 8 minutes left. Could you fill these 8 minutes with telling things that are interesting or worth to know about the star skull that are, staggering or that you haven't told, but that are still interesting?
Certainly. I think probably the most intriguing thing for me and the most interesting thing for me, we've touched on it a little bit with the idea that the bone could help with osteoporosis and other bone conditions, is the idea of getting cures for problems that we have now out of the genomes of other creatures. They're already doing this to an extent with the Neanderthal genome. There are I think about 2,000 conditions in humans that are very severe genetic conditions that are completely untreatable at the moment. What they're doing is basically looking at the human genome and looking at the Neanderthal genome and trying to find the places where the human genome doesn't work, where it has these genetic diseases, and trying to see if the Neanderthal genome is maybe has a puzzle piece right at that point that's going to fit into the human genome, and if maybe that would cure it. Now, Neanderthals are radically different than humans. For all that they're considered our close relatives and everything, there's really only about 4% of the genome that we share. 4%. Now, we share 97% with chimpanzees, and we only share 4% with Neanderthals. So that's actually a very, very wide difference between the two of us. Now, we're not sure exactly what the difference is going to be with the Star Child, but we think it's going to be more like 40% different, 40 to 50% different from the human genome. So that's much more similar. That's much more potential for finding those magic puzzle pieces that work right in the Star Child that aren't working right in humans that can cure these conditions. Now, people get very concerned when you start talking about genetic manipulation and gene therapy and that sort of thing. And a lot of that comes from ignorance and misinformation. But even if it takes 20 years for it to be socially acceptable to do these things, I don't think anybody that has a child with one of these conditions is going to stand up and say, oh, no, I don't want you to cure my poor sick child. I think that if the treatment is available, there will always be people who want to take advantage of it. And there is such an incredibly broad range of treatments that can potentially come out of the Star Child. The one that our geneticist is the most excited about is the potential for increasing the human lifespan. The Starchild skull, we haven't really mentioned this, but we have a piece of the upper jawbone from the Starchild skull, which did have some teeth erupted. It had some teeth in the mouth, but it also had teeth up in the bone like a child ready to come down into the mouth. So looking at that, you would think, oh, it must be a child. And in fact, we have some experts who to this day maintain that it must be a child. However, the teeth that are in the mouth are so worn, and they look so much, they're almost half adult and half baby teeth. They look so different from what a child's tooth would look like, that the consensus now among the majority of the experts is that this must have been an adult that had the ability to grow multiple sets of teeth. Not exactly like a shark, but in that way. Now, there are humans who do grow multiple sets of teeth. They get teeth knocked out, new ones grow in when they shouldn't. So this is something that's possible. This is something that's hidden somewhere in the genes of some people. The Starchild skull, what if it had the ability to do that? What if it lived so long that it needed multiple sets of teeth?
Yep, so could be. Yeah.
We really think so, based on the differences in the DNA. Differences in your DNA aren't just, oh, it's different, how nice. They do things. Those differences make changes. They cause things to be different. With this many differences, almost the sky's the limit. There are so many things that could come out of it. And maybe we won't be able to make humans live 150 years, but maybe we'll be able to let them grow a new set of teeth so no one needs dentures anymore.
Yes.
Even if we can't get the absolute height of what we hope might come out of this, even the low-hanging fruit is just so tempting. There are so many good things that can come out of it. You know, what if there is a way to give all of us bigger brains and higher intelligence? What if there's a way to give all of us these thinner, lighter bones? The Starchild skull's eyes are very unusual, and unfortunately, we've only got the bones to go on. It's difficult to get a real sense of what the actual or the eyeball, the orbit would have looked like. It's difficult to get an idea of what the optic nerve would have looked like, but the eye sockets of the star child are radically shallower than human eyes.
It's certainly now, very, very interesting. Amy, I have to interrupt you here because there's another host starting his program, Common Sense Preparedness, Tim Howard. He's coming right after me. But maybe we should do a second interview when you are available.
We certainly can. It might be an idea to wait another couple of months and give us a chance to get more research done. But I strongly encourage your listeners to go to StarChildProject.com and check out Official Lloyd Pye on YouTube. There is so much more information. We could do a 24-hour interview and not cover it all. So definitely go and check that out.
Yes, Amy, I was very honored to have you as a guest, and it was really very fascinating information that you shared tonight with the listeners, and I want to thank the listeners for tuning in, and also want to ask listeners to send me a donation via the website, bbsradio.com/ET First Contact Radio, and you can click on the donate button. I'm back next week, next Thursday. And also next Monday on Finding Voices Radio. Amy, it was really a pleasure to have you.
It's been an absolute pleasure. I'm so glad we had this opportunity to talk, and I wish you all the best in the future.
Yes, and you know how to contact me for another interview. So whenever you feel you have something interesting to share, we'll get it out to the open.
I will definitely do that. It's been a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure. Be well.
You too.
Bye-bye.